You're listening to 9 Plus, a research podcast from SETU Ireland. Welcome along to this episode of 9 Plus. My name is Rob O'Connor, a lecturer from the Department of Computing and Mathematics at SETU. Normally in this podcast, we focus on postgraduate, postdoctoral and professional level research that has been carried out across the university. However, today we're going to look a little earlier, talking about two initiatives that bring science, in the broader sense, to a wider audience. The first, Science Week, is an initiative that runs scientific events for preschoolers all the way up to retirees and seeks to encourage a greater public knowledge of science and scientific literacy. Sheila Dunnigan from the CalMass group in SETU is in to talk about that. And the second initiative is the SURE Network, the Science Undergraduate Research Experience, which aims to promote good scientific practice at undergraduate level in universities and higher education institutes across Ireland. Lecturer Claire Lennon is in to talk about that, as well as recent graduate Emma Carney, who presented at this year's SURE conference. We also get into some broader questions about what science actually is, good science versus bad science, and its role in society today. We'll begin by having my guests introduce themselves.
I'm Sheila Donegan. I'm Director of CalMast, SETU STEM Engagement Centre, and I'm a lecturer in chemistry.
I'm Claire Lennon. I'm a lecturer in chemistry. I'm a programme director in pharmaceutical science, and I'm an academic researcher in the Pharmaceutical and Molecular Biotechnology Research Centre.
I'm Emma Carney. I'm a recent graduate from the pharmaceutical course in SETU, and I'm currently working as an analytical researcher in Teva Pharmaceuticals.
Excellent. Well, you're all very welcome into the studio today. We're going to have a broad conversation. I'm going to be very interested to see where it goes and the things that we touch on. We tend to focus a lot on, we focus entirely on postgraduate research on 9 Plus. We're going to go a little bit earlier. We're going to look at the kind of stuff that's done at undergraduate level, and also even before that, particularly the kind of work that Sheila and the team at CalMass do leading up to Science Week, which is on the horizon. I'm going to hit you with a fairly big question first, you can interpret it any way that you want. What does science mean to you? What does the word science, what does the discipline mean? Sheila, you're looking like you're itching to have a go at that.
I don't know. I suppose science is a study of the natural world and how things happen and why they happen.
So simple as that.
Yeah, it's very broad, but in fundamental terms, that's really, I think, what it's all about.
Mm. And Claire, for yourself, what do you think?
I think it's something similar. It's you know, similar to what Sheila is saying there. It's really a study of, for me, everything around us, you know, in the sense of the different properties, the different characteristics, the different uses, the development of new and innovative areas, products. So yeah, it's wide ranging, in that sense. Yeah, but there's a curiosity to science as well, in the sense of understanding and then trying to develop new areas, new innovations, new products.
Emma, you're nodding. Do you agree with what the two have said, or are you going to come in and say no? It's something else.
I definitely agree. It is like that. I actually have a little bit of a different perspective of it as well, that I think it's a process as well. I come from an artistic background, and we studied drama and theatre studies, and we studied kind of practitioners like Stanislavski and Chekhov, and they actually approach, you know, acting and performance as a science, as a process, and even lighting design and stagecraft and all of that, that's a science in itself. Colors change things on stage, so you have to use physics. So I think it's a process of understanding and making certain tasks easier through steps.
I think it's very interesting that you brought in theatricality to it. Not that everyone is a performer, but we often hear this acronym that's used, STEM, and I'm sure you're sick to death of it, Sheila. Like STEM, S-T-E-M.
Science, Technology, Engineering and Maths, isn't it?
That's right.
But
yeah.
I've heard you mention this before about, there's another one called STEAM.
That's right.
Which is Science, Technology, Engineering, Arts.
And maths.
And I wonder why the arts element is often left out of this. I don't know, does anyone know?
Well, I don't think it is. I mean, I think for so many people, or particularly people have in the past, I suppose, identified as arts as being the creative process, whereas science is more process driven. But science in itself is hugely creative. I mean, there would be no real new discoveries if people didn't have the imagination and the curiosity to actually look and develop and see how things could be a bit different or could be better. So I think what it's just bringing them all together. There's also, when you say STEAM, there's also STREAM, bringing robotics in. So the acronyms are getting bigger and bigger all the time.
You used an interesting word that Claire also used, which is curiosity. And I suppose maybe is that at the nub of it, people who are involved in science, in the broader sense, are curious about the world or the universe or about how things operate on a very small level or a very big level, depending on what you're at.
That's absolutely true. I mean, even you look at young children, you could say that all young children are naturally scientists because they're curious about the world about them and how things happen and how things work. And that, you know, I think it's important that we keep that curiosity and creativity in young people as they, you know, as they study science, as they go through education and ultimately go and develop into adults. So the whole idea of developing and maintaining curiosity and creativity, because I think the two of them are inextricably linked, I think it's so important. And just when you were saying about STEAM, if you think about, say, the most well-known or one of the most well-known scientists in history was Leonardo da Vinci, who was both an artist and a scientist and hugely creative in both and hugely successful in both.
Is maybe the problem that creativity is often difficult to quantify, whereas you can quantify other scientific values or outputs are easier to quantify than maybe creativity? Or am I being reductive? Anyone want to take that?
I think as well, the outputs of creativity have changed dramatically over the past 100 years. You've gone from theatre to radio to film to now internet streaming to social media. So it's not as easily quantifiable as with science, because every generation there's different terms of success in terms of creativity. But that innovates and advances as fast as science does.
So are we all agreed then that science is curiosity, creativity, innovation, and probably a little spark of luck as well, every now and again. And all that coalesces around a search for knowledge. Is that fair enough? You're all nodding, so yes. Yeah, it's a podcast, so I'm going to say that. okay, right. So with that in mind, I want to talk about two things. I want to talk about Science Week and I want to talk about the SURE undergraduate conference. So we'll start off maybe with Science Week, because that's maybe something easier for somebody to get their head around. So Sheila, Science Week, what is it and when is it?
Science Week, it's a pan-European festival. Festivals take place all across European countries the same week in the year. In Ireland, Science Week is coordinated by Science Foundation Ireland, and they fund 13 regional Science Week festivals. Of the 13, CalMast in SGU is coordinating three of them. The Southeast Science Week Festival, which covers Waterford, Clonmel and Carrigan-Shore, Wexford Science Festival and Kilkenny Science Festival. And well, the aim of Science Week is to celebrate science and to expose people to different aspects of science from the very young. We're doing events for preschools right up to pensioners and people in old folks' homes. And the range of activity is, it goes from A to Z. I mean, this year, for example, we're working with Garter Lane, and it's 55 years since 2001, A Space Odyssey. was brought out. So we're having a special screening of that with a panel discussion looking at AI and where it is today, and are computers going to take over the world?
Can I ask you a question? Did you program that? When did you get that one in play?
July.
July, okay, so July of this year?
Yeah.
Okay, right, yeah. Okay, very interesting. So it's quite topical and very now.
Yeah, absolutely.
That also has a homicidal AI in it, which is maybe frightening, but we won't get into it. But that's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, we're also working with for adults, we've a huge range of events. We're working with Waterford Distillery, looking at the taste of whiskey and how science affects that, because I don't really drink whiskey, but maybe I'll start now. But the taste of whiskey can depend on the geology of the rocks and also the soil that the cereals are grown in. So we're doing a talk with Waterford Distillery about that. Then completely different, we're having a family fun day in the Theatre Royal on the Sunday for families, where they can go and they can learn how science can help you ride a unicycle, or how science can help you take the perfect penalty. Brilliant. So it's just so broad. We're hoping to have something for everybody. And in addition to that, we're going to direct provision centres with events. We're doing workshops for older people, again, exploring creativity and science. We've biodiversity walks around Waterford. Anything that we can do to encourage people to think differently about science, we're doing. Lecturers from SETU are running events. Bruce Water from Health Science is doing a talk on the science of extreme sports. And Aoife Hearn is doing talks about nutrition and how to lead a healthy life. We're also working with the GP, Mark Rowe, who's going to do a talk on how to lead a life full of vitality. And these are all based on the theme of Science Week this year, which is human and what it means to be human. So it's really nice then tying it back into AI and the possibility of computers not being human and them trying to take over.
I thought that was
potentially.
I thought it was a big question asking you a bit, like, what is science? You say, what does it mean to be human? That's an even bigger one. what is the date, or what are the dates of Science Week this year in 2023?
It's starting on the 12th and the 19th of November.
12th and the 19th of November. And there's a whole range of events. And if somebody wants to find out about those events, there's a website. So it's scienceweek.ie, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, if you go to our website, which is calmas.ie, all of the festival websites' details are all on those. And you just need to pre-book. All the events are all free, but you need to pre-book the events on calmas.ie.
Would I be right in saying that one of the big driving factors of Science Week is to make science accessible for everyone, that you don't necessarily have to be somebody with a PhD in molecular biology or pharmacology or whatever it is to engage in this?
No, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, that's hugely important. I mean, our world is becoming more technology driven and scientifically driven the whole time. So it's really important that everyone has a chance to be exposed to science. And that's what we really want to do, because it's often just by going to events that people kind of say, actually, I'm really interested in that. And what I found over the years is that I'm meeting students studying in SETU, and they said they got interested in science from coming to a Science Week event when they were in primary school, and then working or talking to people in industry who have come through SETU. They say they got hooked into science from going to a Science Week event, and they hadn't been or had they hadn't realised how many options were available in science before they went to something like that. So it's really trying to expose as many people to as many different aspects of science, and for people to realise how important science is, and that science is all around us and it impacts us every day of our lives.
So whether you're 8 or 80 or anything between or either side of it, there's probably some sort of an event in the Science Week calendar for you, provided you've got a curious mind.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so let's say Science Week is aimed at non-scientists, even though I know scientists can go along to it as well. I've been to a number of, I won't say I'm a scientist, but I suppose I am to a certain extent. But Claire, let's switch over now to the SURE undergrad conference. So this is something that is aimed at third level students of science. Emma, we're going to bring you in here because this is where you have direct experience as well. So what is the SURE undergraduate conference?
Yeah, so I'll just talk, if I can, about the SURE Network. So the SURE Network is the Science Undergraduate Research Experience Network. It's a national network, and our aim is that we're focused on enhancing practice in research in the undergraduate curriculum. And we have six partners across Ireland. It's a multidisciplinary network. And really what we are interested in is really embedding research and giving students the opportunities to celebrate their research achievements. And one of those is through the SURE Conference, which is a national conference, which is specifically aimed for undergraduates. Usually, if you're talking about research postgraduates our academic researchers will come together maybe once a year where they discuss their research, where they discuss the topics that they're working on, their results. They come together, they present that, and they, you know, meet and network and collaborate with their peers. And what we wanted was to give students that opportunity, because the undergraduate research project is a huge part of the curriculum. It's a key part of the curriculum. It often happens in the final part, the final stages. Our students work on various topics very independently, but with usually an academic mentor, work collaboratively, and they get a real chance to build both their disciplinary skills, but also other very useful skills around problem solving, around critical thinking. It's a really significant I would always say a really valuable piece of work that students contribute. So we organise a yearly conference. We've run six cycles of conferences now at this stage. Our last one was held on October the 13th in Technical University up in Dublin. And at that, there were about 300 students who came from across Ireland. So I'll just to mention the audience that are at the conference are undergraduate students who are just starting their projects. So it's a real learning activity for those. So it would be students in their final year. Yeah. They're just starting their project and they're coming to a conference for the first time. And then the presenters at the conference are graduates like Emma, who have finished their research project, or maybe are in the final stages and completed a previous research project. So they're presenting what they have completed over the year, what they have learnt, and it's a really good connection, because sometimes, you know, it can be starting a project can be really challenging, because there's a lot to think about, particularly about around where the project will go, what I need to know, what techniques I'm going to use, how will I present my work. And so it can be quite challenging for students, but to see the other side, to see what can be achieved in that year. And I think that's what's really, really important. So it's really, to celebrate the academic achievements of recent graduates in the science. And it is a multidisciplinary conference. We also have academic attendees as well. We have presenters as well that are working maybe in industry, or graduates themselves who completed, who are working in research or in industry, and they're talking about their work to the students. So we had, we had our most recent one on the 13th. There were 41 students who presented posters, which is a kind of a one page A4 representation of their work. And there were 13 students who presented their research over a 10-minute presentation with questions afterwards.
So Claire, I'd imagine one of the reasons why this is valuable, I mean, you said about it's often the audience is students starting a project and the presenters are students who are just finishing a project. I suppose maybe the first time somebody is getting into research, it's quite abstract. There isn't necessarily a set path. It's not like a lab experiment or where you just like assembling IKEA furniture or something like that, where you have a kind of an end goal and you know what the end thing is going to look like. For somebody, it might be something that's nebulous. You don't necessarily know what you're looking for, because if you knew what you were looking for, it wouldn't be research. And this is where Emma comes in, because Emma, you have direct experience in this because you've just been through this. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. So can you tell us about your experience, what you did, and then we'll hit you up about what you learned from it.
So my project was the extraction and application of nanocellulose in relation to nasal spray formulations. So when I got my title, we first had to do the literature review. And that's essential, because when you get that title first, you're like, okay, where do I go from here? So you need to read up on absolutely everything you can within those areas. And from the literature review, when it came to the actual physical process of doing my project, I knew what direction I wanted to go in. Now, that didn't mean that everything went perfect, but it gave me the start of the direction. It kind of cleared the path, if you get me, because it is very daunting at the start, especially for, like, you know, people think very differently. There's people who think very laterally, and there's people who think very kind of, you know, abstract. So it does suit more people than others, but the literature review was by far the most important part of that, because it gave you the tools to go into the physical part of the project. So I started by doing an extraction, and there was only a few papers on the extraction that I wanted to do was on eutectic solvents. I wanted to focus on those because they were green solvents. Now that didn't work, but that's okay, you know. I tried it a couple of times. It didn't work. That's fine. And then I focused on how to formulate a nanocellulose drug formulation. So I did what's called a design of experiments. So I had several parameters. So the percentage concentration of nanocellulose, the blending speed, and the blending time, amount of time I blended it for. So I changed them. I had like two options, so 1%, 6%, 2000 RPM, 1500 RPM, and then 1 minute, 5 minutes. Mm. And I had a number of experiments that, you know, differed to the parameters. Then I did several tests to see if there are any visual differences or observable differences that could suggest that changing these parameters could affect the properties of the formulation. Now, of course, we have to take into consideration as well, I'm an undergrad. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an expert. And the instruments that we're using are, you know, very kindly gifted from other institutes and stuff like that. They're not like, you know, some what Pfizer is using.
Yeah, but don't put yourself down.
Oh no! I know, but I have to do a disclaimer. Yeah. But yeah, no, I did see very obvious differences, observable differences between the measurements. So I was doing spray area, the actual regulatory test that you do for nasal sprays is plume geometry. And what you would use for that is laser diffraction and on something called a spray tech. Mm. Now, unfortunately, we didn't have that. So I had to kind of extrapolate what that was measuring. So if I sprayed it onto a surface at a certain angle, I was able to then determine what the angles of the spray was through the spray area.
And so this is what you did for your final year project, is it?
Yes, it was.
But
yeah.
Then you coupled that with the SURE network and the SURE conference.
Yes, yeah.
And then, right, so you strike me as, so you're very confident, you're speaking very well. Had you an awful lot of presentation experience prior to this? Academic presentation experience?
There were a number of presentations that we gave throughout the course, like from first year to fourth year. And I definitely think that was invaluable in terms of preparing us for presentations for fourth year. Mm. Like, for example, in third year, we had to do a presentation on our results in a lab for Claire's lab. And we had to stick to a certain time in preparation for doing an academic presentation.
Mm. And how then did that carry forth to the Your Sure conference presentation or Your Sure conference work?
It definitely helped me to keep things short. Short, sweet, to the point. It's very easy when you know your work and you're confident and proud about your work. It's very easy to kind of deviate and try and explain every point, because you want to kind of get across how passionate you are about it. But the general public doesn't have, you know, that same, they don't have that same context. So you want to kind of almost give it an elevator pitch, as they described it in the Sure conference. Keep it short, keep it sweet, and keep him interested. So it definitely helped with honing my skills that way.
And now, if you want to be utilitarian about it, you've got a job as an analytical researcher.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that obviously played into that somehow.
Yes.
It sounded like it did anyway, yeah.
Definitely, yeah. No, a lot of my project was material characterization. I did a lot of particle size distribution, and that helped me get to the job that I'm in now, because I'm an analytical researcher for the material characterization team. Yeah. So I've just jumped from one particle size laser diffractor to another.
And so, Claire, would there have been students who are now in fourth year, in their final year, would have seen Emma present?
Yeah, we brought a group up from SETU for the day, both from our Waterford and our Carlow campus. And yeah, the feedback from students was that it was really, really beneficial. I think the theme of the conference, which was really quite interesting, was how to do an awesome final year project. So as well as the presenters presenting their own work, each presenter gave a very short description of what they felt was important. So it wasn't just the science, it was the practical skills of how, you know, what can I take from the day that is important that I can put into practice straight away around my research project. So every oral presenter, also the poster presenters when they did the pitch, and Emma did one of those pitches as well. And throughout the day, that was the actual theme. And there was also a kind of a fireside discussion as well about completing the final year project. So it all embedded together really well, and everybody could take something from the day that they could directly apply.
Can you remember what some of those tips on a good final year project were? I might steal them for myself.
I think there was lots of tips during the day. You put me on the spot, Rob, now.
Yeah. Oh, well, you brought it up.
No, I mean, I think a lot of it is really planning, I would say. Planning, timekeeping, particularly for lab-based experimental type projects, that you have a plan going into the day as to what you are going to do for the day. And that's planned out very, very well. And that you manage your time. Collaboration, you would have an academic supervisor, making sure that you are in contact with that supervisor regularly, that you're taking feedback on board. And it's about, in terms of the project for the student, it's a collaboration in terms of the process and the ideas that the student will bring to the project, but as well as the supervisor and their skills, and it is a teamwork. Another thing is resilience. I think maybe I mentioned it earlier on. Sometimes things don't work out as planned.
Yeah.
And it's really trying to, then your curiosity comes into play very much. It's trying to understand, well, what might have happened? Why did this result happen in this way? What might I, how could I, try to analyse, what has happened in that experiment? So it's all about, questioning and curiosity. So, So I suppose those were some of the themes that were mentioned. I don't know, Emma, can you remember what your tips were for?
I remember my main tip was find something that you're interested in. I didn't know if by that stage they had picked their projects, because when I went to the Sure conference as a fourth year, I hadn't actually picked my project yet. I didn't know what I was doing, and so it was very important to not just pick something that you thought you could do, but pick something that you actually want to do. and then use the literature review to kind of look at areas of science that you wouldn't normally have encountered during your undergraduate. It's the best opportunity to get that chance, and then keep in contact with your supervisors. That's so important.
Something that you said, like both Emma and Claire, has reminded me of something from a few years ago. I had a fourth year student in computing, and he did a fabulous project that didn't work. And he did really, really well marks wise. But the reason he did really well marks wise, it didn't work. On paper, it should have worked. It didn't work. Okay, that wasn't ideal. But he had all of these steps laid out as to why it didn't work. And that was what was really, that's what impressed his, I don't say his adjudicators, his examiners, that, okay, this didn't work. But we can see you've done it kind of, you've approached this in a systematic way as to why it doesn't work and potentially how it could be fixed in the future, but it's beyond the scope of what you could do now. And I always remember that one because it was a real lesson for me, because you were expecting something, well, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, you know, because I have this kind of build it mentality. That's not necessarily always a good way to go about things. You can learn as much from your mistakes or things going against you as things going for you. I don't know. Sheila, you're nodding. You agree, disagree?
I think you often learn far more when things don't work. And I think a huge, I suppose, characteristic of a good scientist is a problem solver. Because if everything worked out the way you would expect it to, well, there would be no research.
Yeah.
It's people looking at things from a different angle, and if something doesn't work, maybe trying to think a bit differently and to think outside the box. And problem solving is a huge part of being a good researcher and a good scientist.
I think you get, and it comes back to resilience, is having, maybe having the confidence in yourself that this hasn't worked doesn't mean that I'm a failure.
It can be really demoralising when it doesn't work.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I mean, obviously, if you've set up something that's taken you months or years, I totally get you. But it's not necessarily means that you as a person are some sort of failure or poor person or something like that. You know what I mean? Poor scientist, poor
person.
But
there's lots of different of discoveries that were made that would never have been made if an experiment hadn't worked. And things that, you know, you do an experiment and you expect one thing, but you get a different answer. Yeah. And that has led to huge discoveries.
Yeah. Isn't that what they talk about? What's this? Is it penicillin? I'm not a chemist. What happened with that? Was that mold growing on cheese or something, was it? That was unexpected.
And I think that he went on holidays.
Yeah.
And he left his petri dish out, and mold grew on it. But Viagra was a typical example of something that happened. And I mean, it's a huge money spinner now. And, you know, different things happen. You know, you do an experiment, it doesn't work, or you get different results. Mm. And that leads you in a different direction, which can lead to much greater discoveries.
Mm. Yeah, or technologies or discoveries can be used in ways that were maybe not originally intended, but have huge impacts as well. So excellent. What would each of you say are, you've kind of answered this already, but I'm going to ask you anyway, just because we can maybe condense it. What would you say are the characteristics of a good scientist? I don't know. We'll start with yourself, Emma, and we work our way across the room. So Emma, what in your opinion are the characteristics of a good scientist?
I do think what was mentioned earlier, that resilience, that when you come across, you know, things that don't work, that you're able to just get up, try again, and look at things creatively as well. That creative scientific process, I think, is very, very important to be a good scientist. That and, you know, timekeeping, time management is also very, very important. And the ability to work, you know, under pressure without losing the head, kind of thing.
Claire, what would you say? Characteristics of a good scientist.
I think in terms of a good scientist, to be able to, I would say problem solving is one very clear characteristic, because I think as we talked, you know, we both all talked a little bit about things when things you know, don't go to plan, and and that is, you know, very, you know, quite common in the sense. So I would say definitely, you know, being able to look at something, being able to analyze it and propose some solutions to it, and to thoroughly investigate those, to be able to look at and analyze something, to critically analyze something as well. So if you collect, you know, information, to be able to, you know, kind of have a critical eye on it, to be able to interpret it, to look at it in the context of other research, and compare and contrast. I think it's so important to mention integrity and honesty in research, and that is so important. It is the of the utmost importance in any research, that there is both scientific integrity and professional integrity, so that we can have trust in our results as they're communicated, and that research can be trusted. So that's very, very important. And I think I'll come back to what we talked about earlier on in terms of in terms of curiosity, and curiosity around, as things happen, you know, wanting to know, wanting to understand, wanting to if there's a problem, figure out the problem. So so all of those, maybe not one, but maybe those six characteristics there.
Yeah. Sheila, I'm not going to ask you the same question because you've kind of answered it already, but I'm going to hit you up with a flip on that question. What we hear about bad science, and you've mentioned there about integrity clearly, but bad science, and I read a great book called Bad Science a number of years ago. It was very funny. You've probably read it yourself. What is bad science? What's the characteristics of bad science, and maybe why we should avoid it?
I would say one aspect is looking at results and seeing things and seeing trends that actually aren't there, manipulating results so you get the result that you want to get, also leaving out results that don't give you the right answer. I suppose things like that. Bad science is also taking other people's results and not crediting them for what they do. I suppose it's the opposite to all the things that good that good science is. I suppose the main thing would be manipulating results, and falsifying. The ultimate part of that would be falsifying results, and trying to, I suppose, convince other people that your results are right, even though you know they're wrong.
And the world is littered with historical examples of this, where there's a very small sample of something that supports a particular viewpoint that is pushed forward, whereas everything else is left behind. Now, you can, I don't even want to get into the specifics of that, because there's a million, whether you're talking about climate change or, you know, where a small group will say, oh, well, this is disproving everything else, which is not true at all. Or groups that were funded by large organizations that supported a particular economic viewpoint down through the years against every other piece of scientific evidence. But yeah, it's an interesting one. It's one I kind of struggle with myself as well, sometimes thinking about what is bad science? Because often we can define something as it not being something else. Do you know what I mean? Because it's very interesting when you talk about good scientists and so many different characteristics. Okay, so what's bad science as well? But we don't do bad science here. We do good science. Right. So let's say somebody was listening to this and they're, again, whether they're 8 or 18, they want to find out more, say, about the SURE undergraduate network. How do they find out a bit more about that, Claire?
Yeah, so we have our webpage. You can find information there about all the activities that we... And it's not just the SURE conference. There's another interesting two different areas that I'll just mention as well. So the second area is that, and it links to the conference as well, is that the network produces a journal where undergraduate students can have the opportunity. It's a peer review journal, again, much in the same as you know, I talked about academics and postgraduates presenting and publishing their work. It gives a chance for undergraduate students to you know, submit their work for consideration for publication. And then another area is our curriculum stream, and that's again about really trying to work to embed research through the curriculum. And this one of the interesting projects, which was led by Dr. Kieran O'Leary at TU Dublin was a set of video tools that were developed for first and second years of an undergraduate programme and for early researchers to really, you know, kind of to build their research skills. So within this set of videos across science have been developed where a researcher talks about a problem. Mm. So they give three possible answers. So you can... And the video then is broken. So if I'm a lecturer in class and I present it to my students, I'll present the chance then for them to come into a group discussion about, well, which is right and which is the best answer. And so again, that fosters that collaboration, that connection, the questioning. And then towards the end, you will play the researcher will play the proposed answer. So it's about building connection from first to fourth year all the way along the curriculum.
And the website for all of that information is sure-network.ie, sure-network.ie. Sheila, if somebody wanted to find out more about Science Week, CalMast and all the events that are coming up in the relatively near future as we're recording this podcast, what's the best place to go to?
The best place is calmast.ie, calmast.ie.
Brilliant. Excellent. And you can follow Emma's adventures as she probably goes off and makes millions on nasal sprays or something like that. So listen, thanks to each of you for coming in and chatting about a kind of fairly broad discussion on science and what it means to be a scientist today. Follow us for more work, etc., etc., etc. Folks, thank you very, very much.
Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 9 Plus. You can find links for referenced websites in the show notes, and we'll be back with more conversations soon.